Hello, I'm Penina from Circle Care Services, and welcome to My BCBA Life. Circle Care Services is an ABA therapy agency, and we're all about giving BCBAs the support and community you're looking for. With this podcast, you're not on your own anymore. You're part of a BCBA community committed to making this world a better place to BCBA. Once this episode is complete, you'll be able to obtain a free CEU certificate for the clinical topic discussed. You'll need to confirm your attendance by taking note of the three surprise words I will drop throughout this episode. There is a link in the show notes below of a form that will ask you for your information and the surprise words that we need to generate your CEU certificate. Thank you, and let's get started. Hi, Jasmine. Welcome to My BCBA Life. I'm very excited to have you here, especially I think it's my first BCBA that I am recording with that is overseas. So if you can introduce yourself, tell us who you are, where you are now, how you ended up there, that would be amazing.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me. This is my first podcast, so this is exciting. I'm Jasmine. I'm a BCBA here. Right now, I'm in Abu Dhabi and United Arab Emirates. A lot of people know because of Dubai. So we're another state in the UAE. So I moved here about, 10 months ago. I moved here after I got married last year. So my husband has a business here. So we moved back in August. And then since then, I'm still practicing as a BCBA, which is actually really very different from what I'm used to.
What were you doing as a BCBA in the States, and how is it different in the UAE?
So in the States, it was very insurance based. So a lot of the things that we had to do clinically were pretty much derived from insurance. I used to practice in New Jersey, but now here, what's interesting, the ABA world is very, very, it's kind of new. The U.S. is already very advanced in it, whereas the Middle East, we're still kind of catching up. But which also gives us a lot of clinical freedom to do whichever assessments that we think is appropriate for the client. And there's a lot of freedom in terms of like what to do and like how to talk to the parents and things like that. But again, I would say the main thing is just more clinical freedom to do various things like with your client.
Yeah, I could imagine. I think like all BCBAs, it's like on their wish list to be able to. So we're very happy for you that you have access to be able to choose really what you want to do. And I think the topic that we're going to be talking about today is like very relevant because you're living it probably every day when you're practicing, and which is culture and how to take that into account when practicing with your clients. So how would you explain what cultural humility is, and why is it so important to have as a BCBA?
So I don't know if you heard that thing all over social media, we listen and we don't judge. That's kind of like the attitude I kind of go with. I'm just listening to all the families. When I moved here, it was a big culture shock. So it was a lot of me listening and absolutely not judging, but also just listening to what the families had to say, what the client's needs are based on, you know, how the culture is over here. If we're working with an Asian family, they probably eat with their hands, and sometimes other people eat with forks and knives, or like, you know, here a lot of people practice Islam, so like maybe they need more help in terms of like, okay, I need my kid to pray, that's a priority over, you know, other things that we may clinically think is more appropriate. So that changes a lot. So it's a lot of listening and adapting, I would say, every day in what I do.
And why is that so important? Why is it so important to have that cultural humility? And I love the way you framed it. Listen, but don't judge, because it's probably very hard, especially if something's very new to you or different. My first surprise word is record.
It's just, again, you have to know your client, just like how we do everywhere, right? Get to know your client and just see what they have to say, pretty much. When we approach it that way, Greg Hanley talks a lot about compassionate care, and compassionate care comes into play a lot here. being very mindful of like what you say, and kind of, you know, kind of doing, you have to do your research, I would say, when you want to approach, like, again, some things may be sensitive to other people versus where it's not sensitive to other families. So again, like a very careful step-by-step approach.
What do you think would be the difference? Like if you would work with a child without the cultural humility versus yes, with the cultural humility, which you do, what do you think the difference would be in terms of the progress of the client?
I would say with cultural humility, it's a lot of parent collaboration. Parent collaboration goes across the board. But kind of using what our clinical skills are and also checking back in with the parent. A lot of it for me on this side of the world, it's just like what's the parent's priority? And if that's what they want to focus on, then again, like involve them in the process. It's a little harder to do parent training. I'm going to be honest on like over here. But again, you have to explain it in a way where it's like, okay, this is step one. That like once we get to step one, we'll go to step two. Sometimes I kind of experienced like, okay, how long is this going to take? But I always relate it back to it's like when we take physical therapy. Physical therapy is not for a long time. If we do the exercises at home, then it's going to get better. So I try to emphasize it in that way, and then they are able to relate to that versus someone who doesn't have, like, you know, we don't really need to think about cultural humility. It's just more of, okay, like, this is what we're doing. This is a plan. It's kind of like you're kind of just shooting your shot there. Like, this is what we're going to do and we'll catch up later type of thing. So that's kind of a lot of the difference. It's kind of similar, but different, you know?
Right. I would imagine that, like, the more cultural humility you have as a BCBA and the family realizes how much you're working with them, they're way more, like, they're way more prone to act as a team with you because they see that you're trying to, as opposed to if you would go and be like, one second, like, that sounds crazy. I can't imagine doing that. Or even if you say, oh, friend, what's important to you, I'll implement it, but I don't know why you want it. I can imagine the response being, okay, so she's on her own agenda and not on our child's agenda. I would assume they, like, mm-hmm. the fact that they see you're so interested and caring, the progress would be a lot higher because they see that you're on the same team as them.
Exactly. And I would say one example I had, I used to work with a client that here, and they're an Arab family, and they just wanted to work on one thing. And when we did the intake assessments, there were a lot of other recommendations, but they're like, no, like we want our child to do this specific thing, like, and that's the only thing we're going to focus on. And versus if you go there with your own agenda, then again, you're not going to get that buy-in from that parent. So that goes back to, again, like, just like I call it parent collaboration, like getting to know not only the client, but get to, like, you have to meet them. You have to meet the parents where they're at.
So, for someone in your situation, you're practicing it every day. So teach us some tips. You come to a client that is very different. It's a new culture for you. The Asian thing you mentioned about them using their hands, that's like a huge culture shock. Because that's something that, like, you know, in the U.S. it's gross or not hygiene, you know, and this is how they want to teach their child how to eat with their hands. Like, you actually have to go against, like, all those feelings. What are some tips for you to act with cultural humility? Because it is an action.
I would say just go with a blank slate. Don't expect anything. I would say, I know a lot of us get like the intake assessment and, like, you know, behaviorally, but like when it comes to cultural humility, especially with these type of families, just go with the blank slate. Don't assume anything. Don't have any expectations in terms of like what you think the child should have. Again, just like I said, just listen, and we're not judging. We're not giving our opinion. To see what the parent has to say, because their struggles here is probably different there. There's limited access here for ABA, and it's expensive depending where you go, versus in the U.S. it's a lot more accessible. So again, I would say just don't think.
Don't think. It's interesting. Go with a blank slate. I like that because we were saying it's hard because we, without even realizing it, even if we want to be non-judgmental, we're judging all the time, right? Like if a person's eyes are closed and they're in a laying position, we're judging that they're sleeping. You know, it's just exactly how we live. We are always judging, but the blank slate is a very, that's a very practical thing to really work on ourselves to be like, okay, yes, even to understand I have my own judgments or prejudgments that this is the way things should happen. This is the way we should go about things. But I'm going to put that aside and hear what the family wants, like, you know, like cleaning that out.
Exactly. And the more you listen, the more like you'll get so much information. And you're just asking like side questions too. Like, okay, like tell me more about this. And, you know, and sometimes they want quick solutions. Sometimes they like it, like, again, depending on the family, but like for what I have experienced, they just like, it's a lot of listening. And the more you listen, the more buy-in you get in with the parent, yes, rather than going in and saying, okay, well, your child needs to work on this. No, like, okay, this is what the parent wants to work on. This is what we're going to work on. Rather than, you know, going against with what we're normally taught how to do.
I actually just had an interesting thought pop in my head because when you said like you have to listen and just get as much information as you can. And I was thinking like if you would ask, if a family would say something that's very interesting, go back to the example where the child has to eat with their hands, or if they're, or if they very important for them to pray and you have questions about it. If you ask direct questions, that might seem a little bit derogatory. Like, why do you want your child to pray so many times? Or why do you want your child to pray like this? Or if you say like, why do you want your child to eat with their hands? But if you rephrase it instead, and you were saying just like ask them for more, my child's teacher, that's actually what she does with my son. Whenever he says something, it's hard to understand what a two-year-old's saying, but she always just says like, tell me more. And that I feel like would be like a great way to use that. And I loved the way she said it. So like, I always think like, how could I use that? And I'm thinking in this situation, instead of saying like, why do you want me to do this? Instead it's be like, okay, you want me to do this? Tell me more. Tell me more about it to get a better understanding. I feel like that would give you the information just to even try to understand where they're coming from.
Exactly. And they're the experts of their own culture. And like when I came here, I knew very little. So it was, again, I treated them as if I didn't know anything. Again, I'm starting from, I know ABA, you know, I know right. What to do clinically, but it's a lot of adapting and modifying. Okay, like how can we fit this how can we fit this specific thing into their routine that they do every day? So because we don't know everything, we don't know what their beliefs are. We don't know someone else's background. We don't know that, like, we get a lot of clients that come in and this is their first time having such type of treatment. So you have to start from ground. You have to start from zero. A parent's not going to understand. You need to reinforce your child. You need to praise your child. Well, why are you doing that? You know? So you have to be more willing to learn. And down the line, adapt and modify how that can work with, you know, the clinical aspect. Clinical aspect's always going to be there. It's always going to be tied in somehow. But, you know, do we use NET? Why are we using natural environmental teaching? Why are we using DTT trials? You know, so yeah. So it's like I said, like they're experts in their own culture. So just listen.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because I'm getting another thing from you here is what you're saying is that because their culture is so different, all of these turns that even for someone who's new to ABA but are in the culture of, you know, play-based learning, this I feel like might all be new to them. So they understanding that their culture is different and knowing their culture will help you understand. Like you said, you have to really explain to them from zero why we're reinforcing, how we're reinforcing. So I feel like that's probably a big curve for you to see, like, where in their culture are they lacking the basics of ABA therapy and how you really need to probably fill them in.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Because it's like, well, sometimes like we do a lot of net, right? So like, right. Why are you just playing around with my child? Well, I'm playing with him because we're learning. If I'm the person who has all the good stuff in my hand, then he's more likely, you know, like when we talk about Mandy, he's more likely going to request. Or if we want him to learn like naming categories, well, the best way is for him to sit down and for him to do it face to face and do different trials, because, you know, doing different trials will help him learn it more and associate more. So like, again, like breaking down what you're doing in a way that like they understand, rather than just going straight into the ABA jargon, like, you know, because again, back in the States, like I've had a lot of clients, like they came, they already had ABA services. I would say that's like, I want to say 80% of my cases back home. And I had like 15, 16 cases, and like family was familiar, which is great. And again, accessibility over there is great. But here, simplest of terms, like depending on what the family knows, some of them actually do have experience before coming to us for ABA. A lot of them don't. So again, prioritizing simpler terms is just best.
I'm just curious, with their culture, what's their take on it? When you explain, like, are they fascinated? Are they like, doubtful that it's going to work? What's their usual response to like your explanations? My second surprise word is shine.
I would say with the clients I had so far, I had to get buy-in from the parents to kind of be like, for example, with this one client, I had a parent that was just really heavily focused on academics. You know, with ABA and academics, there's a very kind of like thin line, you know, teaching at the academics versus, you know, doing ABA. And the client really had the main issue he had was communicating, like, I need a break. Like, I need a break from schoolwork, because the schoolwork here is different. It's a little bit harder. And so the mom wanted to work on multiple choice questions. And I'm just like, that's not, like, he's not there yet. We can work up to it, but we need to start in baby steps for him. Like, we have to have him sit down and ask for a break, because if we keep pushing him, like, you know. And after a few months, mom was just like, did he do the science portion of a standardized test that they do over here? And mom said at the call, she said, I'm just glad he sat for the exam and he was able to ask for a break. I'm like, that's great, because that's what we were working towards. So like, again, priority shift. And you have, again, it's more of, yeah, we want to try and align the best that we can. Okay, we can make the assignment simpler. We can modify it. We can use different materials. Maybe they just need a different objective. But again, just explaining that to the parent too, like, to get to step 10, we got to start at step 1.
Yes. So important.
But yeah, the priority shift so much.
I could imagine. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear from you, like, practical examples of where you came in with your agenda that's preconceived, even though you come with a blank slate, but you thought this was a good idea for the child, and the family, based on their culture, was like, absolutely not, and how you had to put the family's needs first. Or even if you came with a blank slate and you didn't have any suggestion, but they asked for something that you made sure to implement that wasn't really something you would have in the first place.
I would say back to my client, that family that wanted to work on a specific thing, the good old potty training. I know that's across the board. I know that's not really like culturally specific, but to the family, that was, because he was in nursery and they wanted to have him go to, you know, the big boy school. He was one of the oldest in his nursery, and with him, I kind of thought, okay, well, the family wants to work on potty training, but we can also work on attending, and we can also work on tolerating, like, playing with others and taking turns. But the more I was there, the more I was, okay, like, this is, the parents just want to work on potty training. And the parents were also willing, like, they're a great family. They're amazing. But they were just like, no, like, I just want him to potty train. Once he's potty trained, like, that's it. That's all I want to do. Even though I had all of these ideas in my head, like, let's, like, so, like, there's so many opportunities in nursery for turn taking. But just, like, solely focusing on, like, having him go to the potty. And eventually he did. And we were able to discharge him, and he can start big boy school in September. So again, it's more of like aligning what the parents need and the parents want, because again, this is what they have to deal with every day, just like any other family worldwide, you know? So, but I think it's just more of like, I know, and I've been a BCBA for 4 years, almost 5 years, and we always go in like, okay, like we're problem solvers and we burn, like you, like we're trying to put out the fire very quick. And I think naturally, you want to do that, and you want to do that in the quickest way, but it's kind of, but being here and learning how to be with my clients, I learned how to kind of like slow down, and just like kind of like be in the moment of like wherever the treatment is or like, or whatever that client needs at that time.
Totally. It makes such a big difference. Also, like, again, like going back to what we were saying earlier, when the family sees that you're putting their needs first, they're way more prone to working together. End of story. Because they see that what matters to them matters to you, and that it makes them understand that you also have their child's best interest in mind. And you also mentioned earlier that just like physical therapy, if you practice at home, your weight, you're going to get better much quicker. And the families, I could imagine, they'll only be interested in putting in the work if they see that they're working with someone and they trust you to give everything, you know, that you recommend. They say, okay, this is someone who is listening to us, who's understanding where we're coming from, and she's recommending this. I'm going to trust her. I'm going to implement, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's like I always say, you know, I love mentoring new BCBAs. I always tell them, before you even pair with your client, pair with the parents, pair with the therapist, pair with everyone around the client. Client, we know, we already know how to do. We can do that clinically. Like all BCBAs, I feel like we all know how to pair with the client. But it's more of keeping that relationship and that collaboration open, and being mindful. And I know these are like things that people hear every day, but it, like at the end of the day, all of this is very, I think all of this just lays all like the prerequisites and the foundation, so that way you can have a successful treatment and implementation of everything.
And what would you say are some barriers, you know, like for a person that would prevent them from having the cultural humility? What are some barriers that a BCBA could have and should think about? Do I have this barrier that I need to get rid of before meeting with my client?
I would say the biggest thing would be just having that bias, before you even start working with them. I know everyone carries like hidden beliefs or like stereotypes, and we just don't realize it. We're human at the end of the day. But sometimes like going in with those biases can kind of influence how we interpret someone else's behavior. Right. And we do it without meaning to do so. So I think it's important just kind of like before we even start with the family, especially where cultural humility is very evident to implement, just recognize your own bias. And I would say another barrier I've seen before was just also just lack of training or exposure to that too. I know like cultural competence was taught, like I've worked for several different companies back in the States, and I used to work in an area in New Jersey where the Asian culture was very prominent. And during like the training process, when the therapist would come in, we didn't talk about cultural competence. We didn't talk about cultural humility, where culture is very heavy in that area. So I just think that maybe there could be a lack of training. Because if you see that, then, you know, then you'll be able to recognize or like use, you know, like ask questions. And, you know, there's like the way you had therapists also with the Asian culture, ask them questions. They would ask me questions, like simple things. Like if someone came in with like, if a kid came in for therapy and they had food and they had roti, they would ask me, how do I heat this up? I'm like, here, this is how you heat it up. You know, do they eat with their hands or do they eat with the fork? I'm like, you just rip it up and just give it to them and they'll eat it. You know, just like small things like that. Like maybe again, like lack of exposure is also, I would say, another barrier too. So I think those are the top two that come to my head.
Yeah, I could imagine that those two make the most sense. Biased is a huge thing. You know, we have our own culture. We have our own how we think these people act. And then all of a sudden you get to know them and you're like, oh, I always thought that. Like, you know how many times that happened where you know of someone just from either the news or just what you learned in history from back in the day. And then you meet and you become their friend. And then you're like, oh, oh, you're also, you know, and it just, it's amazing. And if you open yourself to this, you're probably learning so many new things, and it's probably a fascinating journey for you. We become, you know, the more we know and the more we understand better people, it's such a gift to be able to be open to learning about other cultures and implementing it and respecting it, because you open up your doors to so many more kinds of people. It's amazing.
Exactly. And again, you get to learn a lot in terms of, like, when it comes to that. I used to work with a lot of Hispanic families. And it was like, of course, there was a language barrier. Luckily, I had a therapist that spoke Spanish at the time. But just like understanding like how their way of thinking and like their way of communicating, even their way of parenting is different from other cultures, right? So just like understanding, I think especially when it comes to parent training, parent collaboration, however you want to call it, being sensitive, and being open to like seeing, okay, this is, you know, this type of parenting is not what I'm used to seeing, or I'm not exposed to this type of parenting. So like we kind of have to approach it differently, you know. And it's the same thing over here. Like parenting here looks different. A lot of families that we provide service to, they have a nanny. And it's a very common practice here. Almost every single family has a live-in nanny or a day nanny. So you're probably not even going to be able to talk to the parent. You know, your main communication is probably going to be with the nanny. So you have to do nanny training. And maybe sometimes you have to kind of switch your approach because maybe the parent wants something different, whereas the nanny thinks they should work on something else. So like kind of also you have to kind of learn how to be that middleman while also approaching it in a compassionate care way.
It's so interesting. There's so many pieces to. My third surprise word is master. Like a BCBA, we always say, wears so many hats. They're dealing with the parents, like you said, whoever the child's caregiver is, in this case, let's say the nanny or their teacher and the therapist and all everything. And to really bring in cultural humility to all the aspects can really, you know, be so game-changing. I'm curious for you how you feel like it changed you as a BCBA to have cultural humility, because you're in a place where you need to have it, because you understand you're in a different culture than how you were raised or what you're used to, how it changes you as a BCBA to really constantly have the practice of cultural humility within your practice of ABA.
I would just say like assumptions just also replace real understanding. Like I know a lot of parents will kind of, or a lot of BCBAs, like I, and again, I'm one of them too. Like I would say a lot of the times the family is just non-compliant, you know, or the family just doesn't want to listen. And again, that could just go back to the simple fact that they just don't understand this, just even forget ABA. Maybe they just don't understand the system of, you know, ABA itself, like where, regardless of where you are. Or maybe they just have different views on therapy. To them, sometimes you kind of have to explain, okay, ABA is not OT, ABA is not speech, ABA is its own science. It's not a babysitting service, I know that for sure. it's not regular one-to-one therapy. So you have to go back and explain that too. Like you have, again, we can't go on assuming things because they just need a breakdown of how we do, how we operate, you know, what are BCBAs, what are therapists. And the common analogy that I use is that BCBAs are kind of like physician's assistants. We're the ones that come up with the treatment plans. We're the ones that come up with, how to implement it. And the therapists who are like the nurses, they do more of the direct care and we're just guiding them. And that analogy is a lot. And then that's when people understand what we do, especially in like just kind of explaining what our role is. Because here they also like they'll say not many people know what BCBAs are. They go with maybe like a QBA, which is like a different type of BACB here. They may know that, or again, going back to like the basics of like what ABA is, who was involved in it too. So.
Yes, no, that's amazing. I think overall this like common denominator, I'm thinking like of what you're saying, which is all so untrue and brilliant, even like the simplest things, you know, that what we know and what we feel is not often what other people feel, even though we think like if I feel this and everyone feels this, or if I know this, everyone must know it. And then we just talk to them like we're in the same, you know, that we have the same brain, but going in, like what you said, with a blank slate and really being open to what's your story, what's your culture, what's important to you, will really take the ABA to the next level because you're on the same team and you're working together and they see that and they feel it. And I could just imagine how much success you see by really putting your family's needs first in this sense.
Exactly. And it's a lot of, again, it's a lot of collaboration. So you have to, like, the more you collaborate with the families, and not only with the families, but, like, you know, with other disciplinary teams, OT and SLP, we're not coming in as the fixer or like the expert. Like, we are the experts in our field, but when you go into, when you have a client, again, that's has a different culture, you're learning and collaborating together. Sometimes, like, again, mistakes may come along the way. Maybe you just don't know. So just ask. I had to ask a lot of questions here. Like, how does this go? How does that go? And I approached each family, like, you know, I was like, as if I was walking on glass, because I didn't know at the time, you know, what's appropriate to say versus what's not appropriate to say too. So, just don't be afraid to even say, like, hey, I didn't realize that. Thanks for sharing. Or can you explain more? I've never, you know, just, again, just being open and honest. We don't need to be, I mean, like, I'm the one that knows everything. I'm the one, like, I'm the expert, so you need to listen to me. No, it's not like that. So it's a lot of self-reflecting and self, just being very cognizant of how you approach a lot of the situations or, like, you know, things that the family wants to work on.
You just summed that up so well. Thank you so much, Jasmine. It's such a pleasure to hear someone with your perspective and your location. So thank you for coming at this late hour for you, because you are in a faraway place. So from here, thank you so much for joining. And I'm very excited for our listeners to hear your perspective.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me. I had fun.
Thank you.